Hello and welcome to Irrationally Writing. I'm Daystar Eld.
And I'm Alexander Wales.
And this is episode 62, Money in Fiction. So I'm actually a little bit surprised it took us so long to talk about this, given how unique an issue it is, I think. It's like one of the things that I think is, once you notice it, it's like really hard to not notice the way it kind of comes into every piece of fiction, given how contrasting it is to like real life. Like money in real life is, it's like a major part of everyone's life. So it's a pretty big motivation for a lot of people. And in fiction, I think it is largely invisible in most stories, unless it's like a MacGuffin of some kind. And that's just like something that's really interesting and curious to me about how in fiction money becomes this like background thing compared to real life.
Sometimes. Okay. So like the first thing that I think of is, did you ever read 50 Shades of Grey?
I've read a very amusing series of read along plus commentary of it.
Well, okay. So there's like a, I guess it was also in Twilight, which 50 Shades is like partly based on.
Yeah,
like,
I did read
like, the Twilight book. She like has a pickup truck or whatever, and her family's split up, and her dad, I don't remember what her dad does, some kind of.
He's a cop, Twilight.
He's a cop, right? But, you know, she's middle class, right?
Yeah.
Like almost quintessentially middle class. And part of the attraction or the fantasy of Twilight and 50 Shades is all this money. And it's very abstract money. I mean, it's just like the black Amex card or whatever it is. I don't know. It's like the unlimited thing. And like money's nothing. And he could just like toss out money by the millions and not care about it at all. I think that money often gets used as a fantasy element. Mm-hmm. It's like part of a, in that case, it's a romantic fantasy, but like also it's a power fantasy
thing.
That's always like the Tony Starks of the world. They're not just like rich, they're just so rich that nothing matters. It gets abstracted away and you do the movie and people are jetting from place to place. And
It's like an element of convenience for getting the plot to move along if needed, and also for showing off cool experiences and just having to not worry about obstacles that would normally come up otherwise.
Yeah. And it's a more interesting, like the kind of conflicts that come from not having money. I guess it depends on how much money you don't have. Mm-hmm. Like you can drive a plot by having a significant debt. A lot of fiction does that drives the plot through having a significant debt, or does the like Breaking Bad thing where there's like a disease or you know, something that you got to pay for or something, but like not, there was a show, it's called Made or something like that. I didn't watch all of it. I watched the first episode. It just was like really, really getting me down. So I was like, maybe I don't need to see like a whole season of this kind of grim, depressing, doing menial labor for small amounts of money and struggling to get by. I mean, I think that it can be compelling drama. I don't think you see it that much, right? Like someone struggling to pay for the gas in their car. But yeah, the role of money in fiction is very interesting. I think part of it's that it's hard to put those quantities in. It's like kind of anti-story in a way to just be like, oh, I need, like the sum is always abstract, right?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter what the sum is. It's just like the difference between a million and half a million in a story is like not that much. It's just, you got to like win the prize match or whatever, and that'll solve your problems. And we don't really get insight into the actual numbers. And I think most authors will go out of their way to avoid talking numbers at any point.
Yeah. And that kind of story, I think, is what I think of as MacGuffin story, where the money is the MacGuffin. It's not valuable in and of itself. It's valuable to the character because of what it represents for them. It's not money the way we would think of money. It's money the way we would think of like a goal or a prize for like a character's loved ones who need medical bills paid or things like that, which are real things that people would want money for in the real world. But it's not set in relation to their financial situation. In general, it's not a thing that they can use for benefits of other kind. It's just the key that they need for the lock that they have.
Yeah. I kind of feel that way about money sometimes. In my personal life, I try to not care about money, right? Like I live fairly modestly and I try my best to not have a life where I'm trying to balance outrageous spending with income.
Yeah.
I find money like kind of boring to have to deal with. And so as much as I can not have that be a factor in my life, I will attempt that. So
So I plausibly will be maybe not trying to change your mind exactly, but presenting an alternate perspective on this, because I think this is an area where like fiction has room to grow, let's say. So the thing that I found interesting about reading The Name of the Wind, which many people enjoyed for various different reasons, the thing that made Name of the Wind very unique for me, amongst like multiple things that it did uniquely, was it made money feel very real and very important and very concrete. There's a huge portion of the story in which the protagonist, like every pauper that they get is like viscerally tied to like, will they be able to survive another day on the street? And then later, like every silver that they get is like, will they be able to have tuition next semester? Then they end up like taking a loan, and then there's like the interest issues and like what happens if they don't get it back. And it does a better job of almost any story I've ever read of published fiction, probably the best story I've ever read in terms of like making money feel real and important to the character in a way that is like, it didn't feel grimdark exactly. Like it didn't feel like it was grinding me down with it, but I could imagine it feeling that way for other people. But it did feel like the money actually mattered to something on a moment to moment basis, and not just as like a prize or not just as like a background like abstraction. And that felt very powerful to me, in part because, I don't know, growing up relatively poor, it's like there's a thing that the character is going through that feels very real. It's not like their whole goal was to have money. It's not like that was like the thing that they were set their mind on or set their heart on. It's just that money was the natural thing that they needed to achieve their goals. And that feels like the important thing that's like actually representing what money is as a form of power that we almost never see explored in fiction. Mm-hmm. And even this, I don't think actually Name of the Wind does perfectly well, because it stops at the point of this is how much money he needs to survive, and then this is how much money he needs to get his tuition and things like this. And not taking it that one step further of what money really can actually represent in people's lives, which is power. And it, like the most generalized form of power we kind of have, in for lack of a better way to put it, default Earth, any story with magic in it, any story with like high technology, they've got all these different forms of power that people can acquire. But acquiring money is like the generic power source that almost anyone can benefit from having more of if they want to apply that to like solving their goals in their life. That's the thing that I feel like, hang on, why isn't this more often in fiction? There's some good answers to that. A lot of stories take place on very short time spans. So like if the person's goal is to, you know, stop a terrorist attack or get like solve a murder or something like this, like acquiring a lot of money to help them solve their goal faster, or like burning a bunch of money in their savings account or something to help them solve the goal faster, is like, there's usually good reasons not to do it, or it doesn't come up as an option if for whatever circumstance they're in. Like maybe they're like far from society, so they can't buy things from anyone or something. But if you play any video game that has like a currency system, like money is just like taken as default as like, oh yeah, you want more of this. If you can get more of this, you want more of it. It'll help you in various different ways. And I think this is something that like stories can fail to grasp well.
Okay, so I think it's hard because it can like spiral out so easily, especially I ran into that problem a little bit with Worth the Candle, where it's like, okay, so they get money. And once they have money, it's sort of like there's so many things that you can do with it. And I think stories tend to work best when they're the like reader's understanding of what is possible is more constrained. There's not that many options to consider. It doesn't, I mean, Worth the Candle is difficult for world building reasons. You have these like unique magic items. And so you're like, why don't they just like go to the auction house? Or I mean, they do in certain chapter or whatever, but why don't they just like buy all this stuff if they have the money? Like they have these unique advantages that can get them money. Like you either like hand wave it away, or you're like introducing all this stuff that you don't necessarily want to use in the story, or like you're not introducing stuff that logically should have been introduced. It's a difficult thing, I think, from a narrative standpoint. That might be why money isn't as like prominent of a thing, or why it's so abstracted. I don't know. I think part of it is also we want that grounding, that connection to people. We want to reduce their goals down for a story, usually.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that money can do, and a lot of those things are not like going to be what the story's focused on necessarily.
Yeah, and getting money obviously is part of the issue, where like you want the thing that they're doing to get the money to be compelling, because if the thing that they're doing to get the money is just like doing a boring 9-to-5 job, you would just either skip over that, or you would write the first day of it and then you would default it to summaries. And again, like mostly people don't have much of a affordance to do something that would be like the slow, boring way to get money. And mm-hmm. so the writer would need to find ways to for the character to exploit the amount of money that they need to get out of the society that they're in, which is like another level of world building suddenly that they have to think about. So yeah, it's not just like what's in the stores that might help them to purchase that the reader should be able to like understand and predict to some degree. What are the ways to get money quickly? What are the efficient ways to get money over the course of the story that the character would want to make use of? It's an extra level of complexity and difficulty to add in. But when I think about a number of different genres that I fairly common, there's something about the lack of what money should represent to a person actually in that circumstance. Plane Crash actually is the story that made me think about this the most, because it's like obviously not so much quote-unquote the focus of the story, but it's an obvious motivation for the protagonist for good reason, because the things that they want to do require lots of money, and so like making lots of money makes sense for them as a goal. And there's a way in which in Pokemon the characters want to get stronger in various different ways. They have goals that they want to achieve. Money is an obvious way for them to try to have more power. And so if they can find ways to make money, they go for it. And that's just one of the many ways that they, in the shonen protagonist sense, level up. And there's all these things they can do with the money, right? They can get new equipment. They can buy new Pokemon. And then it's like, okay, why not just buy a ton of Pokemon to come up with reasons why it makes sense for Blue not to do this? Or relatively speaking, like why it would make sense for anyone in Blue's position not to do this, not to like, say Blue himself specifically can't do it exactly. It's more like, why would it make sense for someone in Blue's position not to? And then there's like this extra layer though of what goals does this character have that money could achieve? And that's the area where like ambitious protagonists should probably spend more time in stories thinking about money than they do. Whereas if the character is, you know, their thoughts about money are the default thing that they're thinking about, and then something comes up and disrupts their life, probably money is not on their mind at that moment. But I don't know, if there's an expanded awareness of what money can do for people beyond just buy things in stories, I think that's kind of the main thing I'm thinking of. It's like, I've never seen a story where a character pays a personal assistant to like help them research something. They have to go to the library themselves and research it. Just using money to solve the problem doesn't come up as like a thing.
But do you see that as like a narrative problem? You're taking some agency away from the main character. And then also you have this character, the assistant, who, I mean, you could do that like as a unintroduced person who does not really have a life on the page and stuff like that. But I guess my instinct, if I were writing, would be this needs to be like new character added in, which can be good. But usually the research person is their own separate character in works like Buffy. There's the research guy. There's exactly. Spider-Man has Ned as the guy at the desk and stuff like that. Money can hire you people and be like a godsend, because then there's like stuff you just don't need to do yourself. You can devote your time elsewhere, especially if you're in like a sci-fi fantasy setting and you have some unique advantage that you need to keep working on instead of doing stuff you can just pay people for. I don't know. I think it's narratively a little complicated to... It's not complicated to like get a maid in a narrative sense. I assume getting a maid is not a difficult thing to do. But in a narrative sense, that's not a difficult thing to do. It's when they start interacting with plot that I think you have risks.
There's the element of what does it mean for the character to use money as an extension of their agency. And I think that's an interesting thing to explore, because it's a certain kind of character that would think to do this. It's a certain kind of character that would recognize this as like a thing that they should use as like a natural part of their toolbox to solve problems. There's like anime like Spice and Wolf, which is like about two merchants, basically. Their goal is to make as much money as possible. There's parts of the story that are all about, as wandering merchants, they talk about like arbitrage and clever ways to get money through mercantilism between different goods that would be needed from one season to another, or one city to another, and stuff like that. But they don't show them using the money really to help improve their money-making ability beyond that. It's like, we're going to have more money so we can buy more valuable goods that we can sell for higher profit. And this is like the baseline progression for them. So it makes sense for them to think of it this way. But it feels like there's still opportunities missing for like what else money could do for them or something. It's also definitely hard in like fantasy and sci-fi in particular, because it's so abstract from our world. Trying to come up with a robust economic system in a non-modern setting is quite difficult.
For this used to be about dungeons, you have this party who goes into the dungeons and they fight monsters and they get stuff and then they sell that stuff. It's like the main thing that they do. So I had this idea of the counter party. Like any dungeoneering party is going to slowly accumulate people who do not go into the dungeon, who just handle administrative stuff and selling the magic items and selling the other junk they pull. And the more I thought about that, how much of this stuff am I going to offload from my characters?
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, well, okay, I can have these other people be characters too, but then I'm like inflating my cast. And some of the things that I liked most about writing dungeons. Mm-hmm. I'm writing epilogue chapters right now, so it's like done. Some of the stuff I liked most was testing the magic items. And one of my favorite chapters is a very early one when they are like haggling over like how much the stuff that they got from the dungeon is worth that stuff. The more that I was thinking about the counterpart, I don't really want to take it to that level, I guess, to solve these problems that for their specific circumstances, they don't really need to. They're not doing enough dungeons that they have no time for anything else, or just makes more sense to not split the profit further. But that was one of the things that I kind of thought a lot about, because in theory, their primary goal as a group, at least early on, is to do this making money stuff. I want to show that. And then the further abstract we get out from that, I can't just write about them going into dungeons and then someone else is doing like a bunch of work for them that they're arguably not like engaging with. I think you probably could. I think realistically, you would do all that stuff. You would have the counterparty. Like, I'm glad, I'm glad the concept is there, but there's a bunch of business stuff that it gets narratively dicey for me.
And it definitely depends what the focus of the story is going to be. The kind of thing that I'm thinking of is there is a hole in fiction in general for this kind of story. The same way that I think there's a hole in general for this kind of story that This Used to Be About Dungeons kind of is, or something. One of my favorite chapters also in This Used to Be About Dungeons was the whole idea of, okay, how do we just get this cabinet out of this dungeon? It's just a really fun thing that you don't see often in this kind of setting and story. And I'm not even saying that like I want more stories necessarily that are about how to use money to leverage value in your life, although I think that would actually be really like cool thing to show up in stories more often. At some point recently, like Red now has like a lot of money, a lot more money than he ever thought he would have to have. And he's just like, what do I do with it? And one of the other characters who is one of the richest people in the setting was like, well, presumably you have goals. There are things that you want in the world to be different. You now have enough money for a little bit at least to like somewhat change something in the world or try to. What would you like to do? What would you like to see different in the world? And part of the reason why I put that in was because it feels like worth reminding the character himself, Red. There are, in fact, things that he cares about in the world. Part of his ambitions are figuring a lot of things out in the world, but he doesn't have time to do them all himself. And like what money does is like it allows you to actually just get someone else to do it instead of you.
Yeah.
And so like I could imagine that there's a version of Mizuki, for example. Is that how you pronounce your name? Mizuki?
We will have to wait for the audiobook. I'm pretty sure it's Mizuki, but I put in for the audiobook, they give you like a spreadsheet to fill out with like pronunciations and stuff. And every time I have to do that, I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't pronounce things in my head. It's just a word.
Interesting.
It's divorced from the sound of it. I don't have a, and you know, sometimes the pronunciation in my head will just change from moment to moment. So yeah, Mizuki.
Sorry. This is totally fine. Yeah. So I can imagine Mizuki just being like, hey, I want more cooking materials from like around the world. I have all this money that I don't know what to do with. What if I just sent people around the world to get your cooking materials and just like mail them back to me or like ship them back to me? And there's like another element of like, Izva could just be like, oh yeah, I'm curious about my backstory. What if I just hired someone to like investigate my dad or something and just tell me what they find? This is the kind of thing, again, like you're right that to some degree, this is like adding more characters into the story, but it doesn't necessarily have to. It's really just about how much do you want that to be the focus of the story versus a thing that characters can do in the background if you want the focus of the story to be elsewhere.
And I think adding characters is totally fine. It's good to have side characters and stuff, and they can have their little time in the spotlight and stuff. I'm not against adding in characters. It is one of the things that I think about and consider. And the loss of agency is the other big sticking point for me and the thing that I think about the most. I'm actually writing, there's the Rational Fiction Fest thing going on. I picked up a prompt for that. Money is like the driving motive for the characters who are part of like a startup or something.
Oh, neat.
I've been thinking about that, especially I see it as a somewhat Silicon Valley mindset. If you have the money, you just erase every minor bump, every minor hiccup. Like if you have these people who are working for you and they're all living in a house together and you have the money, you don't want them to spend time cooking or like going grocery shopping and stuff like that. You want to just erase every conceivable bump and inconvenience that money can erase, because if you're paying these people to exploit the whatever or get all this work done, you don't want that time to be inefficient. It's been a mindset that I do hold that mindset because there's a lot of stuff that I spend my time doing and I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, why am I doing this if money can solve this problem instead? And sometimes it's just lack of money and stuff, but I've been trying to channel that mindset of what does life look like for someone who venture capital is taking care of is trying to like build them a way to accomplish specific work that only they can accomplish because of their specialties or stuff that they know or things like that.
Yeah, the comparative advantage argument is generalizable, mostly because obviously the majority of people don't have spare cash around to use it as much as they would want to for things like this. Most people will obviously pay like a mechanic instead of try to fix the car themselves at this point. There are things I think used to be this way, but then people just don't anymore because like technology has made them more convenient to do them yourself. But accountants are still one of those things in America, at least, where like most people will either try to use the free technology or like, you know what, I'm just going to pay an accountant $100 and have them do this for me.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
Washing clothes, doing dishes, and there's a lot of stuff that even wealthy people now, they just have technology to do it. Some people do have like a maid who comes in and does their dishes.
The daily thing is much rarer. Yeah, it's like that's for the really rich. Yeah.
But having a maid come in like once a week, that's upper middle class, I would say. It kind of depends on what your priorities are and stuff like that. Home chef is also at the upper tier of you have a lot of money. But even middle class people will just go get fast food because it's faster, even if it costs significantly more.
Another story I actually want to highlight is Marked for Death. It's a rational Naruto quest that's been going on for many years now. It's really, really long and really good. And like money is also like quite important for some level of, I'll avoid saying too much spoily stuff, but like at some point in the story, like money is like quite important for the various different projects that the protagonists have in mind. And there's a way in which it's on levels that are way more than most people would have to think about. It's not like pocket change. It's like, how much money do you have to like do something like civilization building, or like funding entirely new sciences and stuff like that. And the way to earn the money is abstract and not very relatable in most people's lives who are reading it. The way to spend the money is like the kind of things that people might want to spend money on if they had to like uplift a pre-industrial civilization, but it's not always clear exactly what the best way to do that in that civilization would be. And so like it's hard to think of things like that that would apply to people's lives as much in the modern world. But I still think that there are things that would be interesting to see as forms of problem solving in stories where people's survival is at stake at the very least, such that like it would make sense for them to do things like spend a bunch of money that they otherwise might be saving for a rainy day or something. And the interesting question then becomes, how is this an extension of their agency as opposed to like undercutting it or something? Where if there's like a person stalking you or something, I don't know, there's like a lot of stories out there actually where like physical danger is a thing that the characters are worried about, but they never like hire a private security guard. Like this is the thing in society, like you can hire someone who will just be with you, watch out for your well-being. Obviously, they tend to be something that like the rich people would have than middle-class people. But like, if you generally have reason to believe your life is at stake and the police are being incompetent, it's a pretty good way to spend your money. Even if there are going to then be reasons they would not, in fact, save your life or something.
Yeah.
But like, as a decision, it's like a thing that doesn't even come to mind.
Private investigators, too. In fiction, they either are private investigators or they don't really hire private investigators. I guess you see them every once in a while in stories to deliver a... They come in, they deliver a plot twist or something.
If the protagonist's like an attorney, for example, they'll have their private investigators that'll be on their payroll or something.
One more thing I did want to talk about is class and its distinction from money. I think a lot of fiction is written by middle-class people, and as a consequence, I think you don't see it, the lower classes in fiction that much, especially not for like an extended duration. It's a commonplace for someone to start, you know, starving on the street, or an orphan who has nothing, but that's usually a temporary state of affairs. Partly that's for the fantasy of progression, not the genre of progression fantasy, where people have this upward mobility and stuff. I think that the kind of things that like stress you out when you are paycheck to paycheck, or like worse than paycheck to paycheck, like you're in debt and you're having to borrow money, and if you lose your job, you're just totally screwed. A state a lot of people live in, I think that can be very stressful and hard to read if there's no way out of it. Like I said, I was watching this, I think it was called Maid. It was something like that. She's like 17 years old and her parents are not good parents. They're like not in the picture. And she like has a baby. She's like working as a maid. And everything is about trying to make these dollars add up to something. Yeah. Money was very important, in, at least in the episode. I just like didn't want to watch it for a season. I didn't want to watch that crushing struggle and that stress. If it's depicted realistically and then a character gets out of that, it always feels a little fake to me. You've injected me into this reality of poverty and then I'm still there even if your individual character wins the lottery or makes it out, whatever, through some circumstance manages to get out of that.
I think I have something of the, maybe not opposite exactly, but like a thing that I notice more is like stories where the characters are always just on the brink of like of financial ruin. Even when I'm enjoying them, there's a part of me that's like, come on, guys. Like, not that it's easy, but when it seems obvious that the narrative needs them to be this way.
Yeah.
It's when it feels a little bit artificial, as opposed to a circumstance where it's just totally understandable to be trapped in poverty for various reasons.
Well, I think a lot of the reasons that people get trapped in poverty in real life, and if you're doing like a realistic depiction, it's kind of what you do, is there are things that you could do if you were a perfectly rational person with unlimited amounts of energy, but you just get worn down and it gets hard to do the things that you know that you need to do. I don't really want to read about that. I don't really want to read about someone who could better their life by like saving up and they just like needed to have some small scrap of joy in their life. That's kind of my view of why it's hard to write accurately. But I know people want their underdogs. That's part of why people will stay poor in the fiction forever, even when realistically they have like all the tools to get out from it. Yeah. It's not the kind of thing that I would write. It's hard to write, but I mean, I grew up poor-ish. Mm-hmm. My parents were college educated, but didn't have money, and they divorced when I was pretty young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were on food stamps for a while and stuff. Yep. And at a certain amount of money, it gets weird for a middle-class reader, especially like the class divide is so real and powerful, I guess, that when you go through the class divide for a character or for reading, like if you're reading about rich people, it feels like wish fulfillment, right? Like in Twilight, he's got the black Amex, or he's got all these like garage full of cars and do whatever he wants within reason with his money. That always feels like, I mean, it is fantasy in that, but even outside of that, it has this unpleasant sweetness of fantasy to me, and this like unreality that the author is indulging in. I don't know if I've read something by someone who had a lot of money that was a depiction of their wealth, if that makes sense. But yeah, I think about class signifiers a lot, especially in terms of like characterization. Like I wrote Eager Readers in Our Area about this girl who hires a reader for herself. And class was one of the things I thought about a lot for that, because it was supposed to be like she's spending money that could go to other things to hire this person to like do this reading for her. And I was thinking, how do you signify her class? Because I wanted that power dynamic. She is paying, but it's a lot of money to her. And he presents as upper class and sort of refined in a way that sometimes comes with class or a certain class refinement. I was thinking about that a lot and how the story would have been different if the class signifier stuff wasn't there. Right. Mm-hmm. If she were a wealthy person, there are different levels of wealth, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's a level of wealth where you just don't really think about thousands of dollars. And then there's a different level of wealth where you don't think about like hundreds of dollars or you don't think about it too much. I was thinking about how that story would be different and worse if the class stuff wasn't there. I think it helps with characterization. I think it helps with, in a hard to describe way, with feeling. I think about that stuff because it can be somewhat invisible for people. In a similar way that gender can be invisible and race can be invisible, class can be very difficult to see unless you're like making an attempt to see it or to have it feature and stuff.
I have a couple posts on my site about my seasons, which are things that I started doing a couple years ago, like every 3 months, just like a different thing that I try to like, a way that I want to grow and a way that I want to improve myself or a thing about my life I want to change. And Season of Wealth was pushing myself to ask for money at all sometimes for things I tend to do for free, and also feel more comfortable spending money on myself. Growing up at certain socioeconomic status that I did, there was like a level of money felt like a scarce resource, even once it stopped being one when I got older, or like stopped being as much of one rather. And like noticing that like I had like a hesitancy about spending money that didn't always make sense. So like that season was very valuable to me, not just in terms of getting past some hangups and improving in some ways in my life, but also like it helped unlock a lot of my later seasons. Like Season of Aesthetics became much easier of like actually paying attention to my clothing and feeling comfortable spending money on clothing. And this is like a whole thing that I just would not have been able to do before my Season of Wealth. And then I had a Season of Class because I became aware that, yeah, there's a thing here where it's like, I have a mindset of being very low class and kind of just not caring at all about class. I'm aware of it as a thing that other people around me care about sometimes, but it always seemed like this weird and alien thing that didn't really matter to me at all. And I read some pretty good articles and a really good book about class and stuff like that, and like kind of learned to develop the eye to see it if I wanted to. Noticed the part that which behaviors of mine would be considered low class and not is like a thing that was kind of interesting to experience, and then notice how much it would be unlocking different mindsets of what's available to me in action space. Because a large part of my agency, I think, has been from this sense of being fairly self-reliant, being able to like do things on my own, having to do things on my own, things like this. And there's a whole level of like the idea of spending money to do things you don't want to do or have things done that you don't want to do, I think is the opposite. It's like the thing that comes naturally to people who are born upper class or middle upper class more. And that transition was part of the valuable thing of the season. But also like, it's just an interesting question of what's contained within a character's agency or person's agency in a story, in their life. And like, how does this concept of what other people are to you or like how they view these things, I think, is a really powerful characterization tool. And this is ultimately what led to me having that conversation in Pokemon, where President Silph talks to Red about what money means to someone in a way that Red, just growing up, you know, in a fairly middle-class family, just would not have thought of and just didn't have a concept for.
Yeah. It's in fiction a lot of the extreme upper classes. If it's not a fantasy, it's used as a shorthand for evil.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't care about this stuff because they have enough money that they like don't need to care. Even if it's something that isn't like human, they're just wrecking clothes that cost thousands of dollars or throw away an artist's hard work or something. Logically, you're still getting paid if someone, this painting that they spent thousands of dollars on and just like didn't really care about. And then it like, I don't know, that's a shorthand for evil. I guess for art, it's different because the artist is like putting something into them. But I think you'd still get that same effect if it were something more practical. Yeah. Part of that's the current mood that's always kind of been there. It's the underdog thing. We like our underdogs. They need to be scrappy. And arguably, at a certain point, you are not scrappy because you just have too much weight to throw around. I've been working on like starting up Glimwarden again, and it takes place in a small town, but just like thinking about class on that scale and making it feel like, because like one of the characters, Melanie, is not impoverished necessarily, but has to be very on the ball about money, right? Because her inn or whatever is, she has this debt that her father left her, and she can either move out of the inn and then just kind of like start from nothing, or she could try to keep up with the payments on the inn and stuff. And I've been trying to think about that specific part of that. And how to handle that and how to not have that just be like an albatross around her neck that is unpleasant to read.
Right.
And then I'm also thinking how to do this in terms of characterization, in terms of what people focus on and how they use their agency and stuff like that. It's a difficult question, especially if you're making up, you know, this is very divorced from the real world and stuff like that.
Yeah. In the very long fantasy series that I've written, 9 novels or something. A loaf of bread cost in this world, then how much does like a horse cost, then how much is a day of labor, how much would they get for that? It's important at some points to actually do this because money is rather important to the characters at various points, and this is one of the things that is like interesting to have to think about. But yeah, the class question comes up for sure. The issue of what does it mean to treat money as this thing that you would hoard versus a money that like a thing that you could spend to get more of the thing that you want faster or something. And if there was like a shonen anime out there that was like one of the things the character does on their journey is, you know, earn some money doing a thing, I don't know, winning some small contest in like a town of strength or something, and then using that money to like hire a trainer to like improve themselves faster or something. Like, this is just the kind of thing that I just can't remember seeing this in anything yet.
Yeah.
The only way you can be trained by someone in a shonen anime is like you prove yourself to them and they take you under their wing as like the mentor figure or something. Like, the concept of using money to achieve your goals just doesn't come up in most stories like this.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's reasons for it. Like, there's, I think it's hard to write, but I also think there's a lot of room to play there.
Yeah, I mean, tabletop RPGs are probably the place where, like, I could see this being the most fun as a place for people to experiment with. What can I do with this money that's not in the book? The RPG books tend to have, like, things that you could do with money, and then you can obviously ask the GM to see what else they'd be willing to allow or something. World of Darkness has a very very simple, but also weirdly complex system of like, one of the merits in World of Darkness is the resources merit, and like how many dots you have lets you determine how much money you can spend by default. So there's like a thing of like, if you have one dot, you have more than enough to meet your daily needs. Like, it's taken for granted that, unless otherwise stated, like everyone just has enough resources for their daily needs to be met. But if you invest a point into this resources merit, you have like up to this amount of money per week or per month or something that you could spend on extra things. And then if you have two dots, then it's like even more. Three dots starts to get to the point of like, you'd be able to actually make some pretty big purchases and so on. And like, you can permanently burn a merit dot if you want to make a massive purchase that like eats into your capital, essentially. And this is like an interesting system because there are ways in which people could choose, obviously, to put points into resources merit as opposed to something like martial arts or eidetic memory or danger sense or like all these other minor powers that characters in a World of Darkness campaign might have, to then use those resources in other things that they can't think of right away, that like as like an adaptive source of power or adaptive source of value. And yeah, that's neat. I like that as a way to think of money and a way to think of resources in general in fiction.
I have an example for you of a fiction. It was called The Daily Grind. I don't know if you ever read that, but the premise is that a bored IT guy finds a subdimension in the back stairwell of his office building, and it is a infinitely expansive cubicle area with monsters made out of like staplers and stuff. He finds this portal and goes out, and he spends a bunch of money to make him actually equipped to explore. So he gets football padding or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like a helmet. And I hadn't really seen it before. It was an interesting use of money in what I felt was it felt unstory-like to me. Because I don't think you would see that very often. You would see that someone just goes out and spends funds from, you know, because he takes stuff from this office dungeon dimension or whatever and sells it and stuff. It felt very simulationist, I guess, in a good way. I enjoyed it. I should maybe get back to that story. It's not something that you see a lot, but it was interesting because it kind of was like a little bump in the reading because that it needs to like come in and he's like needs to go through this list of all this stuff that he's got so that the reader knows that he didn't just get this. I can't remember exactly. It was like football equipment. It was like a bunch of rope, some duffel bags, all this equipment that you would buy if you wanted to covertly explore this dungeon dimension and get stuff back from it and not have anyone know. You need a first aid kit, right? You need to go out and buy a first aid kit. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. I don't remember exactly when that happens in the story, but that's an example of, I think, the fiction space you're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. And this is something that I think sometimes about, like what chapters I might edit or slim down in the early parts of Origin of Species just to like get them on their Pokemon adventure a little faster and have it less slow at the beginning. One of the chapters I keep thinking of is the chapter that's just them going to the shopping mall and like seeing all the things it has to offer and making some purchases. But it's also like important just to like set up what's available in the possibility space. It's like very rare to have stories address this and like consider it directly. And it's something that will probably feel gamified a little bit. Like you said, it will feel a little simulationist for a lot of people, probably. But it probably shouldn't. Maybe it's too strong a claim, but that it shouldn't feel that way.
I don't think there's a problem with it being simulationist. It's just, you kind of got to be aware that you're going with that vibe. I wouldn't do that if I was just going to have that one part be simulationist.
Right.
Simulationist vibe. I wouldn't want that one thing that has that vibe and then not have the other things also have that vibe.
Yeah.
You don't want to have your clash of vibes and stuff. When I think about it, there are actually a lot of people shopping chapters in this used to be dungeons, but it's very slice of life. So that was part of the, and you know, they're interesting shops for the most, I think there's one where Hannah just goes to a bakery and it's like a totally normal bakery.
But part of the thing that I appreciate about the story is like showing this thing that you would expect them to do and they realistically would want to do with their own interests. Like explicitly, many of the people doing these dungeons are just like, yeah, it's for money. You want things in the world. This is a way to get money to get them. And then also there are things you can get that'll make it easier to get more money from the dungeon. So like, why not do that?
Yeah, there's probably, it's what I end up, it's like 190 chapters or something like that. There's probably like 20 of them where people are just shopping or dealing with business concerns or things like that. I feel like I've been a little bit down on spending money in this episode, but I just think it has to justify itself in terms of like being interesting or cool, in addition to being like something someone would logically do. If you want to elide as much as you can of the boring stuff, I'm going to think about this more while I'm writing both this little ficlet thing that I'm writing and rewriting Glimwarden. I guess not rewriting Glimwarden because it's not like in the chapters that I'm rewriting. Suddenly going to find a ton of money or anything, but I think there's opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the chat on this. If there's anything that comes up in terms of money stuff that you'd like to chat about in your future stories, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Sorry it's been so long since the last episode came out, but this one probably is also going to be probably another episode it's not going to come out for a while, but we'll see.
Our fans, they understand. They understand that they're in this for the long haul and the episodes don't come that often, but that's perfectly fine.
It's probably going to be a couple months before this one gets edited, so enjoy it when it comes out.
I actually had a private message. Someone messaged me on Royal Road asking me when the next episode of Rationally Writing was coming out. And I was like,
Good timing.
Yeah. It'll be a while, but it's good timing.